welcome everybody to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast, special All-Star Break edition, part two. I am Eric Horn. I am in Oklahoma City. So is Maddie Lee of the Oklahoman. Maddie, we are I'm back from Charlotte, the long, strange trip that it was. And the Thunder has a few more days before they get started again, but I guess we'll go over some of the highlights of the All-Star game and some of the things to look ahead to in the last 25 games of the season.
Awesome. It was a fun game. I was like so excited at halftime to turn this into the I Told You So podcast, and then Team Giannis let it slip through their fingers.
Wait a minute. I told you so. Jog my memory on this. What did you say about the All-Star game? I don't remember.
I didn't definitely say that Team Giannis. I was not going to go that far because Team LeBron is stacked. But I did say it'll be interesting to see how the two teams play out with Giannis's affinity for fellow big men. And I was like, who knows? Maybe this year will be the year of the big men. And you were like, no, no, no. And I was like, crazier things have happened. And I, like, through the first half, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to tweet it to jinx it, but, like, this might be happening. And then, you know, Team LeBron played, like, a little bit of defense, and that was it.
Yeah, it was, I think that Team LeBron really kind of asserted its dominance in that second half, particularly through Mr. Kevin Durant, who's an outstanding player. Thunder fans can, you know, they can poo-poo on Durant all they want, but it would be
he's so good
and look, Paul George has had an incredible season, and I think he's had the best all-around season of any small forward in the league, and I wrote about that, you know, in the All-Star game or after the game or whatever. But I think Thunder fans, because I see things for what they are, I think Thunder fans would be very biased, and particularly with a recency bias, and to just not acknowledge that Kevin Durant is on another plane in terms of his offensive efficiency. And that's not to say that Paul George hasn't had a great offensive efficiency year, but and also you have to take into account that it's an all-star setting and guys aren't playing super hard defense or whatever. But we have not seen many characters like this Kevin Durant fella. And I know Barry Trammell wrote a piece about, you know, Paul George doing some of the things that Kevin Durant did in his best seasons in terms of efficiency, the numbers being very close. But go back and look at Kevin Durant's Thunder numbers. Like, go look at his numbers with the Warriors. Like, this guy is special, man. And I'm not going to go on very long.
Stuart's back here agreeing with you.
He might be disagreeing. He might be a Thunder fan.
He might be. He actually sounds pretty mad.
But if you can separate the way that Kevin Durant has handled himself since leaving the Thunder from his play and his talent, then you can easily understand that this guy is a special, different kind of small forward than we've ever seen in the league in terms of the way that he can score the ball at his size.
And Barry said that, too, in his column. He was like, look, I'm not saying that Paul George is as good as Kevin Durant. Like, that's ridiculous. Just, like,
yeah, let's don't do that. Let's not do that, people. We can do this. We can acknowledge that Paul George is having one of the best seasons in Thunder history while also not disparaging what Kevin Durant did throughout his Thunder career and as a Warrior as well. But yeah, no, Team LeBron was great in the second half. They really turned it on. Paul George kind of went flat in that fourth quarter. He missed all his shots. Russell Westbrook played a pretty standard Russell Westbrook game. It kind of lined up with what he's done throughout the season. I mean, he shot terribly. I knew he was going to shoot a ton of threes. He actually shot fewer threes than he had in, you know, some other All-Star games he's had in the past 4 or 5 years or so. I think there was one All-Star game where he shot like 17 threes, 13 threes. But I knew he was going to be taking a bunch of threes because it's the All-Star game and he's not trying to get to the lane.
He had a nice little pattern going along there for a little while where it would be like, miss a dunk, make a dunk. Miss a dunk, make a dunk. Miss a shot, make a shot. It's the All-Star game. It was fun. He also had the moment when he had a wide, wide open dunk opportunity, but Sal Paul George on the perimeter was like, eh, I'll give it to him. Gives it to him, starts celebrating. I went back and watched it for the journal that I did yesterday, and he has already made it full circle, like from under the basket to behind Paul George, already celebrating before Paul even makes the shot.
Yeah, it was fun. The whole thing was just a bunch of fun, and Paul George made a point to, you know, I kind of asked him about that in post game, and he reiterated, like, I kind of went into it with, and this is probably foolish of me, but like kind of a measure of where these guys stood in terms of the hierarchy of the league. And, you know, you could take a little bit of that from it, but you shouldn't take too much. Paul George certainly didn't go about this as like a measure of where he is among the small forward rankings. He was just having a good time. And so was Westbrook. And, you know, whether those guys win or lose, it's not that big of a deal.
Reverse 360 dunk.
No, it was great. It was
that
great.
Was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, it was beautiful dunk. You know, Paul George has 20 points and, you know, makes a bunch of threes. And, you know, maybe Giannis should have drafted better. Maybe that's the reason they ultimately lost, because, you know, Team LeBron put on a show in that second half.
Yeah, but Team Giannis put on a show in the first half. I'm proud of I feel like as a first time All-Star drafter going against a second time All-Star drafter, he didn't do a bad job. Like, anyone who's done a fantasy football draft knows how stressful it is, as like your clock is counting down to when you're picking your guys, and they had to do that live. So he can't just sit there like winding down the minute being like, oh, let me crunch these numbers, like, da, da, da. And when LeBron takes whoever he, you know, had wanted originally.
Yeah, team tamper for the win. You know, there's videos circulating out there of Kyrie apparently saying something about two max slots to Kevin Durant in the hallway. Somebody was taping them talking to each other, because, of course, that's what people do at All-Star. And it's also one of those where you're probably putting words in people's mouths because you want to hear things. We've had that.
Like the whole, yeah Westbrook shot.
Yeah, we've had that happen here. So the point is, there was a lot of that talk at All-Star about the future of Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, yada, yada. A lot of people think Kevin Durant's going to the Knicks. I think that kind of remains to be seen, but it seems to be one of those things that people want to happen, because people love the you know, the speculation game and the moving and shaking and whatnot. Paul George had a particularly fun post game, I thought, taking a jab at James Harden, saying he hit the step back in his face.
Oh my gosh, that was so funny.
The that's romantic, when the when the reporter said, "What was it like to spend some quality time with Russ?" It reminded me of Bad Boys, actually. There's Martin Lawrence is adamant about quality time with his wife, and quality time is a euphemism for sex. So, yeah, like, when Paul George said quality time, the way he said it, he was like, quality time? You could just tell he was like, dude, like, we're not, what? Yeah, it was really funny. But, yeah, Paul George was having a great time, and Russell Westbrook got out of there really quickly. I couldn't even get to him because how the format goes at All-Star is they pick a certain amount of guys to go to the podium, and that's in this year it was in like a pretty small room, basically like the size of the room where, you know, the Thunder would do their post-game interviews, which really should be an expanded space for All-Star, but Charlotte blew that. So this room was just utterly crowded. You could barely get in, but by the time that Paul George came and he was the last guy to talk, the room had kind of cleared out and I was able to get in there and sit down. But everybody else who isn't invited to the podium, they're all in this little walk-around area with, like, tables, and it's called a mixed zone. And basically, I couldn't find the mixed zone because there are all these signs, and I was typing on deadline. So by the time I got out of there, even if I would have found the mixed zone, from what I understand, Russell Westbrook went, like, less than a minute and 30 seconds. So
they had women's soccer, the NWSL has mixed zone for every post game, and it's really stressful to navigate.
Yeah, it's a bunch of people standing up, and all the crowds are kind of, all the scrums are kind of blending into each other because everybody's packed into this tight space. And I imagine that Russell Westbrook did not like that very much because he's a guy who likes his space. So I didn't even bother to try and go to the mixed zone. I couldn't find it anyway. So I just went to the crowded media room to try and get Paul George, and that worked out. I got some decent video, but the point is, All-Star is a cluster. It's a big old cluster, and a lot of it, as it should be, is for the fans. For the media, it's really a big just kind of just hassle. But no, at least we got some decent Thunder moments out of it, I suppose.
How was J. Cole live?
I don't know. There was a huge video board in front of my face. I didn't even get to see it.
No!
No, seriously. I was sitting on what would be like a baseline, but it was like the 100 level. So I was behind where the players, the starters, and all the players were introduced. So whenever that stuff happened, they would lower this massive video board. So when the J. Cole concert went on at halftime, they lowered the video board, and I didn't see any of it. And I was working through halftime. Now, I could have easily just stood up and walked around and watched it, but I was working and I didn't want to get up. So I was like, well, whatever. I could hear it and everybody said it was good and whatever. But I'm going to be honest with you, Maddie. I couldn't tell you a J. Cole song off the top of my head. Like, I'm not a fan of his work. I literally know zero J. Cole songs.
I sing Crooked Smile to Stuart like every other day just to boost his confidence, because for those of you who haven't seen pictures of my little stew, he's got quite a crooked smile.
Yeah, I saw your tweet, and apparently a lot of people thought that J. Cole was fantastic, and Damian Lillard said that that's his favorite rapper and such.
I love J. Cole.
I've never gotten into him. I don't know what it is exactly. Like, I've heard some of his stuff, but none of it's particularly remarkable to me. I'm sorry. Like, it just doesn't like stick with, I'm just like, okay, yeah, he sounds like a guy. All right.
All right. I'm going to sit you down and we're going to
go through some
of his best songs.
You could try.
And if you don't like them, I'm going to explain them away so that you.
It's like some people just don't sound, they don't resonate with me in terms of like their flow and their sound. It's just kind of like, it'll never, I don't know, maybe he's one of those guys. But yeah, I did not see a single bit of the J. Cole concert. I didn't really see any of Meek Mill in the beginning either. Just
wasn't watching, you tweeted something about how watching J. Cole was like the trade-off for playing transition defense for team
yeah run. That's what Mike Malone said. He said basically he kind of joked that he let those guys go out because the Team LeBron guys came out at halftime and they were sitting on the sideline, like basically just watching the J. Cole concert, and Mike Malone said he'd let them go out and watch the concert if they agreed to play transition defense in the second half, and they did because they ended up winning because they didn't play any defense in the first half. But yeah, I imagine J. Cole did a great job, and everybody said he did. And thank God for Anthony Hamilton for nailing that national anthem. He kind of took me in a couple of different directions, and some people on Twitter didn't think he did a good job. Look, after Fergie, Anthony Hamilton did a tremendous job after Fergie.
I got worried at some points because he did his own thing, and so at some points I was like, oh my gosh, like having minor flashbacks, but he'd rein it back in as soon as I got nervous.
I got nervous a few times too, but he did kind of come back to it in a way that Fergie didn't. And it was just smooth. It was really smooth. It reminded me a little, actually, of that iconic Marvin Gaye national anthem at the All-Star game many, many decades ago. And I'm not going to dare say
we can agree that Marvin Gaye is amazing.
Yeah, and I'm not going to dare say that it's anything close to that, because I think that's probably the greatest national anthem of all time. But it had some touches of that, and it was certainly better than Fergie, because I was in the building for Fergie, and I distinctly remember someone turning around to me, looking me dead in my face. I'm not going to say who this person is. Looking me dead in my face and mouthing the words, "This is awful." And everybody remembers.
I applaud her for her bravery to try something new.
That's yeah, no, I don't. It was terrible. It was awful. But yeah, All-Star. There you go. It was a thing. I got really sick, and I'm still congested, and I'm glad that I'm not in Charlotte anymore, and it took me way too long to get home yesterday. Y'all want to hear about that? Y'all want to hear about my...
Oh, this is such a good
story. My adventures? Yes. Okay, well...
It doesn't sound... The way you prefaced it, it sounds like not a good story, but...
What is the thing?
They don't know that how good this actually is.
Well, they don't... That seems like so long ago, because after that, I had to go through 4 hours of delays, essentially, or three or four hours of delays. I'll start with the bad part. I got delayed for about 3 hours in Dallas at Love Field for some reason. I'm not exactly why. I think it might have been a Southwest maintenance issue with a plane that was coming from Phoenix. But yeah, I was in the Dallas-Fort Worth airport for quite some time. Ended up getting a $100 voucher. I was supposed to get home at 3:55 Central. Didn't get home until like 7. So that was the boring, not fun part of my trip. The fun part was I get to Charlotte Airport to leave and around 11 o'clock in the morning. Well, actually, it was like 9 something. And the TSA line is very long. So I'm like, okay, let me fire up a podcast or something so I can just listen to something while I get through this TSA line. And I finally get to the point to where you go through the, you scan your stuff. And they close off the line after I go through. So I was the last person to make it through that person who checks the IDs and stuff. And I'm the last person to put their stuff on this scanner before they close down from 3 lines to 2. But before they close down the line for good, they let 2 guys in on wheelchairs that are being pushed by people. One of the guys in the wheelchair... he looks like he's trying to impersonate Ray Charles. He's got sunglasses on. He's got a huge jacket on. He's like iced out, like neck and wrist. And he's got a French bulldog on his lap. And I'm looking at him and I'm like, who? Like, I mean, yeah, it's cool that they're letting these people through, because this guy clearly like needs the help. I'm like, who is this guy? I'm like, okay, whatever. So then I start putting my stuff on the conveyor belt. And then I look over and the guy stands up and I'm like, okay, he's clearly not disabled. And then he starts taking his stuff off, and I'm like, oh, that's 2 chains. So, like, I'm looking around. I'm pretty sure it's 2 chains, because I've seen him in multiple areas or places before. I saw
how many chains was he wearing?
He was wearing 1 chain, which also raised the question.
It's disguise.
Yeah, I was texting a friend of mine, and I was like, he must have given a chain to someone during the break. He might have lost it. He's probably going to have to call back to whatever hotel he's at and be like, excuse me, this is 2 chains. I think I lost one of my chains in one of your...
Because I am currently only 1 chain.
I have a single chain. But, he starts taking off all his stuff. He takes off none of the jewelry. Just takes off his jacket and his hat. And I turn around to the TSA lady behind me. I'm like, is that 2 chains, just to like confirm that I'm not crazy? And she's like, yep. And I'm like, why was he in a wheelchair? And she's just like, just flat, just like, she's like, oh, to skip the line. And I was like, all right, makes perfect sense. And that was my 2 chain story. But the second best part of it was 2 chains goes through the security. He gets to the other side. And then the TSA guy has to flip through a wad of money that 2 Chainz has in his hands. I've never seen this before. He's actually like searching through the wad of money that 2 Chainz had to like check for whatever he has to check for. He had to have a couple of grand in his hand. It was a massive wad of money. The entire thing was absurd, because there's this little French bulldog walking around, and 2 Chainz just skipped like hundreds of people in this line. and I got to watch the whole thing. I took a picture of it. It was fantastic. And yeah, that was my 2 Chainz story.
I texted you this, but I love that he's just carrying around massive amounts of cash and still flying commercial.
Yeah. It was pretty comical. Like, he just had like a huge wad, and he's like, nope, I'm not going to spend this on a private plane. I'm going to fly a commercial, and I'm going to
carry it around.
And I'm going to get in a wheelchair with my French bulldog, and I'm going to skip this line, and I'm going to shove it in everybody's faces. You know why? Because I'm 2 Chainz. Because I'm Titty Boy. And that's not me. That's not me saying bad words, people. That is actually his name, Titty Boy. That's right. But yeah, let's just jump in right here and talk about the last 25 games of the Thunder season. They start Friday against Utah. First game of back-to-back, Saturday night, also in Oklahoma City against Sacramento. Maddie, are you excited to see the Thunder get back on the floor?
I am. They're really not, like, no easing back in. It's like, all right, cool. Glad you had a nice little break. Bam, bam, 2 Western Conference opponents. No break in between. Have fun with that. But no, it should be 2 good matchups, even though the Kings don't have a Bron jumper anymore.
Yeah, that'll be good for the Thunder. the Kings have gotten rid of the Thunder Slayer. But, you know, a big matchup with Utah on Friday, and we don't know if we're going to see Markieff Morris yet, but regardless of whether we do or not, it's a big one for the Thunder from the standpoint of they can win the season series with Utah if they win this game, and that'll be huge. They already have the season series against Portland. They've won 3 out of those 4 games with 1 more to play. They've already won the first 2 against Utah, 2 games that were, you know, one was a blowout and one was, you know, basically a game that the Thunder stole in Utah. So big one for the Thunder to start the last quarter of the season on Friday. And you'd like to see them come out and put up a good defensive effort against a Utah team that, you know, hasn't been great offensively this season, but has started to pick up like the Thunder has since the turn of the year when the schedule softened for Utah. So for them to get a win on Friday will be big, not just to start this last stretch of the season, but in terms of the standings, because Utah's a team that, you know, is battling for playoff position in Western Conference seating, just like the Thunder is.
Right. And the first time that they played Utah here, too, if I'm not mistaken, that was the second night of a back-to-back. So Utah had...
Yeah, it was for Utah.
And so Utah's second night of the back-to-back. They're in the middle of a really tough stretch. The beginning of their schedule was real rough. So, like, this is definitely not a given coming up here. The Thunder, obviously, if they play like they're capable of, can certainly win against this team, but they're not gonna roll over by any means.
No, it'll be an interesting game, certainly. And you know, the Thunder's gotta have these games against division teams. You know, they've got 2 more coming up against Denver. And for them to be able to possibly jump Denver in the standings is going to be big for them. You know, they're 2 games behind Denver going into this last stretch of the season. Denver's in the number 2 seed. The Thunder's currently 3rd in the West. If they can get over Denver somehow and win-loss, because the division record is going to be tough because Denver only has like 1 division loss, and that's a tiebreaker if the teams wind up with the same record and they wind up with the same record in head-to-head. It goes to division, and then Denver would have a better division record than them, presumably if things play out the way that they do. But if the Thunder can jump them in the standings, that's going to be big for them because they'll get to avoid potentially Utah or Houston in the first round. There's still a lot of games to be played. You know, 5 through 10 in the Western Conference is really tight. It's actually like 5 through 8. Those last 3 seeds are really tight in the Western Conference, so obviously there are a lot of games to be played and a lot of shuffling to be done. But if the Thunder can avoid a Utah or a Houston in the first round, that bodes much better for them getting out of a first-round series. And I think it's presumptuous to assume that the Thunder is just going to get out of the first round just because they played as well as they have. Utah's a good team.
It's all about matchups.
Yeah, it's all about matchups. And Utah's a good team that keeps them out of the paint. Houston, you know, we've seen James Harden be able to do what he's been able to do against the Thunder. And Houston's been playing better basketball, you know, since Chris Paul's been back. So it's not a given that, you know, the Thunder are just going to roll through a first round series if they get a Houston or Utah.
Quick side note, I cannot believe that there are only 25 games left in the regular season. I realize I missed all of preseason, the first two of regular season, but it still feels like it's gone real fast.
Yeah, yeah, it's gone pretty quickly. And, you know, I think it's weird that the way that the league, you know, formulates their schedule, and that the All-Star break really isn't the halfway point. It's not even close. It's, you know, it's more like the three-quarter mark. And for us to act like it's a halfway point is just not accurate at all. So, yeah, I mean, it's coming down to the stretch now, and we'll see, you know, how this Western Conference plays out, because everything's pretty jam-packed, basically 3 through 8. You know, the Thunder has a little bit of distance from, you know, the 5 and the 6 seeds, but it's a pretty jam-packed Western Conference that could play out any which way if a team loses a couple games here and there.
Right. Well, and I joke about Amon Shumpert. Kings aren't going to be up in that upper, those like top 3-4. But they made a bunch of moves at the deadline, and they do look like they're a better team. Obviously, we'll see how it plays out over the course of the season. But yeah, I mean, honestly, the fight for that 8 seed is going to be fascinating too.
Yeah, yeah, because you got the Lakers are 3 games back of the Clippers, and then the Kings are 1 game back of the Clippers, and San Antonio and Utah are a game from being in the 8. So it's going to be interesting 5 through 8. Actually, you know, as I was saying, I guess 8 to 10 is really interesting too, because the Lakers are going to be fighting for a playoff spot. So all kinds of intrigue around that. And then you just got to figure out how you're going to fit in Markieff Morris. I don't know what this guy's going to bring, because he's been injured, and I just don't know how good he is defensively. I think he's an upgrade over Patrick Patterson, but I don't know how much of an upgrade necessarily. I think his positional versatility is key. He can play some forward, can play some center, but I'm going to have to see it first before I believe that he's a guy that's going to really make a huge difference for the Thunder in the playoff setting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm excited to finally get him in here someday.
Yeah, excited for the Thunder to finally make it official, because Paul George keeps making it official every time he talks. it'll be cool once the Thunder actually makes it an official thing sometime this week.
And they can talk about him, and we can pick Billy Donovan's brain about him. And
right.
All that. So if anyone's out there ready to like yell at us for not having quotes for more people about him, it's because they haven't made it official yet.
No, and look, they haven't had a team function,
and that.
You know, they're not going to get together until probably tomorrow, and then even tomorrow he might not be available because they haven't made it official. But if they do make it official tomorrow, then they'll probably throw him out there, and we'll get to do our meet Markieff stuff, and yeah, so should be interesting. I heard some interesting things about the fellow over All-Star break. He's very very open, very very truth telling, which we'll see how that translates to the Thunder. But he should be fun. He should be a fun addition to the roster.
Cool. Stoked.
Stokery. What else you got on deck, Maddie? You want to tell the folks a little bit about what we're working on this week?
Currently, you know, this might be up. Well, this will probably be up after the podcast. I'm working on a story about Raymond Felton, who I know, like, obviously he's a big influence on the younger guys, but I want to tap more into the influence he's had on Paul George and Russell Westbrook, because I think that's a little less, like, right in your face, you know? But he's almost, you know, like, you had Nick Collison as a guy on the bench who was the veteran, and it's almost like now that Dennis Schroeder is in the lineup and Raymond Felton isn't isn't, then it's almost like he's taken on that role. I'm not comparing him to Nick Collison, but it's a similar, like, veteran on the bench glue guy role.
Yeah, it's a role that, you know, a couple of different Thunder players have had throughout their time. You know, I think Royal Ivy was an important guy in that mix. Earl Watson, I think, was an important guy, you know, to Russell Westbrook and those young guys when he was here. Nazi Muhammad, Nick Collison. And now it seems to be Raymond Felton's kind of turn to be that guy who's kind of the right-hand man or the consigliere to the stars. And, you know, Raymond Felton's done a great job of that this year. And you know, the few times he's played, and particularly in the last, you know, couple of weeks, he's been valuable for him. But aside from that, he has value in just his leadership and then being a guy that those guys can lean on, whether it's Paul George or Russell Westbrook or whoever needs it. He's been great for him, and he's been worth it. You know, he was worth it last year in terms of his play, and this year he's worth it in terms of his leadership and his presence.
Yeah, and he was saying when I talked to him, this is the first. Bless you.
That wasn't a sneeze.
I never know what to say when people cough, because I feel like you need just as many blessings when you're coughing.
But... you probably need more.
What was I saying?
You were talking about Raymond Felton talking.
You know, he's saying, like, this is the first time in his career when he hasn't been playing regularly. And that's a huge difference. Like, he's done a great job transitioning into that role in a transition that could be, like, super, super frustrating. And he's just been, like, it's to sound like Billy Donovan, just like the consummate team guy.
No, he's been good for him. And, you know, later on this week, I'll probably dive into the Markieff Morris acquisition, how he helps this team, how he fits with this team. And, you know, that's a big question. But, you know, he's a guy who's obviously going to play. The Thunder wouldn't have went and signed him or agreed to sign him and pay the taxes that they're going to have to pay to bring this guy on if they didn't think that he was going to be an integral part of their rotation for the last 25 games in the playoffs. So I'm going to kind of get into how he fits. And then you know, I'm going to write about Steven Adams later on this week. Just all the responsibility he has as a defender in the pick and roll on that team. You know, there have been a lot of times this year where Steven Adams has looked like he hasn't been playing well. And I will say that there have been some times where I don't think Steven Adams has been particularly good. For the most part, I think he's been good this year because, I mean, the Thunder has a number three defense in the league for a reason, and I think he's a big part of it. But a lot of the responsibility he has and all the responsibility that he has, that's something that I really want to write about, and how his role has changed from when he came into the league to now with the evolution of the five position. He has to do more than he ever has in his career, and, you know, that's a challenge for him and the Thunder.
Yeah, and that's an interesting, I mean, I overheard you talking to Steven about this in the scrum, but, like, honestly, just a fascinating league-wide phenomenon, how different the five is being used compared to even just, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's certainly been a big change for big men in terms of how they have to defend, and then it's even more unique for Adams because the Thunder uses him, you know, to hedge in that pick and roll and get up high on guards to prevent that 3-point shot and to prevent them from getting passes off, you know, to rolling big men. You know, Steven Adams will be the first to tell you it's the guards' fault, and he kind of jokes about it, but he's kind of not really joking either. You know, the guards have to do a good job of containing their assignment, getting over screens, you know, working hard to contain those guys at the top of the pick and roll. Otherwise, Steven Adams is screwed. He's in no man's land, so... it's a difficult task and one that I want to kind of get into a little deeper, how tough it is basically to be Steven Adams in defense. But yeah, that's what we have on the schedule for this week.
I don't know if you guys really... a break doesn't mean we're taking a break.
No, we're there's no breaking. We don't have to go places at night, but other than that, we're still potting and writing and doing things, and you know, that's how it goes. But yeah, I think that'll do it for today. Maddie, thanks for putting up with me and my my congestion.
Of course, and I feel you. Been there, not to the same extent, but it's All-Star break is the perfect time to get sick, and apparently that's
yeah. That's hopefully, happening. Hopefully I'll be halfway decent when Markieff Morris shows up, so he doesn't think I'm, you know, this diseased freak of a beat writer. But thanks for joining me again, Maddie. Thanks for making the Thunder Buddies podcast everything it is. And thank you all for listening and subscribing on Apple Podcasts, downloading, sharing with your friends and family and pets. And we will see you after Utah on Friday.